not only live among ourselves, but they live in us and we in them. Relations here are not external, but internal, so that we are our relations cannot be self-saved as we are members of each other. When there is strife in the community, there is strife and pain in us. And when it is at peace, we have peace in ourselves. Here, social memory is not what is written in books and preserved in libraries, but what, not without mediation of books and monuments, to be sure, it is our own past living in every self. When we become members of such a community of selves, we adopt its past and our own, and thereby are changed in our present existence. So immigrants and their children do, for whom pilgrims become true fathers and the men of revolution their own liberators. So we do in the Christian community, and the prophets of Hebrews become prophets, and the Lord of the early disciples is acknowledged as our Lord. Not what is after the flesh, that is what is externally seen, but what is after the Spirit, what has become a part of our own lives as selves. It is an important thing in internal view. In our history, associations mean community, the participation of each living self in a common memory and common hope, no less than in a common world of nature.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This isn't working, but I suspect I can be heard fairly well. Okay. It's working and it's not working. Okay. As I start, I would like to say that I believe it was on Monday, November 5th, that, well, before I even go there, one time I was in my clinical training, and in my clinical training, periodically we have to go before committees. And when you have to go before a committee, you have to present yourself, write things about yourself. And a supervisor said to me one time, "Gregory, you need to brag on yourself a little bit." And I'm not very good at that, and sometimes I leave that, but I want to brag about our church a little bit. That a couple weeks ago, a gentleman by the name of John Hagee came through the Melbourne area, and he is a religious person calling for a preemptive strike against the nation of Iran in order to receive the blessings of God. It's kind of a curious way to get the blessings of a God, or your God, is to destroy something to get a blessing, but in trying to protect Israel. We had about 10 people from our church there standing and protesting. And I must admit, I developed a Bible study and put it on a piece of paper that countered his Bible study, naturally. And I had these visions in my mind of standing in front of the door handing out my Bible study and saying, "This is the official Bible study of the night." So giving my Bible study out, which countered his theological interpretations of the Old Testament Hebrew sacred text. But when I got there, there was a long line of people, and I saw one person at that particular point holding up a sign protesting, and as I brought out my 100 flyers, I had John Hagee pointing up going, "Preemptive strike Israel," and a cruise missile going up in the air, and he believes in that Jesus is going to come back in the sky, second coming. And so I had the cruise missile striking Jesus as he's coming back at the second coming, and then I had Jesus letting the cruise missile drop on Iran, and that was on the other side, so I knew that might have been a bit inflammatory. However, accurate. Just want to kind of show how the ideas don't really connect. When I got there, I started going up to the front, and I became afraid. They had their own private security, moving people around, making sure people were in line, and they had police officers there. And in my fear, I went back to the only person at that point standing there protesting, I guess that somehow soothed my anxiety, And I eventually did go into the back parts of the parking lots and put them on a windshield, saying, yeah, I did something, you know, at least I did something. I was really surprised at my fear, because it was kind of overwhelming. And so now I've got this ideal image in my head, which I thought would be good and such, but then I also have this image in my head of myself being fearful at the time of delivery. And I wonder if, I know I'm not the only one that would have that kind of experience. And as we gathered, about 20 people or so showed up, and some other people expressed fear and such. And there was a couple of very courageous people, and I hope they will maybe come to our church one day at the Forum or something and tell us about it, that actually went into the belly of the demon, so to speak, and talk about that experience of how hypnotic it was, and calling for, in the name of love, firing of cruise missiles and a preemptive strike on another nation. I think that's very relevant to our church, where we are in our process and our maturation as a group of people, and when we talk about our mission statement. Because our values are other than at least the loudest spoken values in our culture. And if we develop a mission, our mission will be opposed to the loudest spoken values and possibly lived out values in our culture. So is there resistance, and would there be fear for us to act out a mission that we say is congruent with our values in a social context which is resistant to our values? And we can go to groups that think like us, and that's pretty easy. But would we be willing to develop a mission and actually step into a community and in a larger community that we know that would be against our values? Or would we become afraid? Or would we become afraid? Often I've spoken of lived values and spoken values, and I'm going to suggest today that we cannot have a mission statement without a mission. But I, as a trained pastoral psychotherapist, our training is that we facilitate, or at least try to, facilitate what's inside the person to come out of the person without being intrusive. Does that make sense? You know, as a counselor, I don't want to be directive, I don't want to suggest ideas, I don't want to push who I am on the person. I kind of want to help clear out woundedness and parts of history that can get in the way, so that who that person is, that can evolve and they can be whoever they are, whoever they want to be, and having faith that that would be a good thing. But here I am standing in front of you talking about a mission which by definition means stepping forward and speaking and at least suggesting a direction and being somewhat directive. That's humbling. And I have to think hard about how not to be intrusive, but to be inviting. Because I know it's easy to be intrusive from the pulpit, from the counseling seat, from person in relationship, and even intrusive to ourselves. How many of us struggle with internal self-judgments and internal dialogue that really feed something that's not good about who we are? So sometimes we're even intrusive to ourselves. And sometimes we know that if we're in relationship, we're intrusive in relationships. We say things we ought not say, and we regret, and we apologize for, and we try to work through that. Well, the same thing is true in counseling sessions. The same thing is true here, that there can be a sense of intrusiveness. And when we think about a mission, and we think about that in religious terms, we think in a sense of being called. To do a mission, we want to have a sense of being called to do a mission. You know, when you go into the ministry, whatever kind of form your ministry takes place, you have to sit before people and you have to say, this is my sense of calling and how my sense of calling was experienced, and I'm presenting that sense of calling here for at least some of the leaders in the community to say, that makes sense or that doesn't make sense. And as a group of people, how do we have a sense of calling that unifies us as opposed to divides us? A sense of calling, we can have a sense of calling and a mission to create an environment. We can invite people who have been wounded in their life to bring healing. We can have a sense of calling to proclaim our values in a larger community. We can have a sense of calling to go out and join other groups and help promote and stand against things that we don't agree with, or help promote ideas that we do agree with. There can be many avenues in a sense of calling. One thing we confront when we deal with a sense of calling or pondering about a mission is we confront ourselves. Because if as a group we choose a mission, and whatever that might be, if we choose a mission, I may have to put aside my ego. I may have to put aside who I am, what I think should be first, and join the group. I may have to put aside who I am and join the group. I may even have to put aside who I think I am to join a group of people that have a sense of calling, that are implementing a mission. So then we must ask ourselves as a church, are we good at that as individuals in this church? Are we good at putting ourselves aside and allowing the whole to speak? There is a fundamental problem with our value system as Unitarian Universalists in this culture. Our values, if we read the principle number 7, that we believe that we are interconnected as human beings and as social groups and with the environment. We believe that. We believe that because it's true. It's true. We are born in relationship. We are born interdependent. We are born interconnected. We are born in a social framework. The other day I was walking around the pond near my house, which I do quite frequently, and it's about a mile around, and it's kind of nice. It has birds, and once in a while you see an alligator, and kids fishing, and families, and other, walking around, and that kind of thing. And I got behind a parent and a young boy who's about 2, and they were walking their dog, and I walk around a couple times, so sometimes we get to see each other and greet each other. And coming back around the second time, the little boy was crying out for mommy. And the parent was walking a bit in front, and it was late, so I knew they wanted to get home, because I've had a little child who sometimes you say, hurry up and get along. What was important was the little boy was discomforted, and he's crying out for mommy. The other parent was saying, come on, let's get along. That is an extremely important moment in time. If the other parent would stifle the crying out, of which was comforting, the image in the child's mind, which was comforting the child, mommy, it would break and deny the interconnectedness of who we are as human beings. It would be an intrusive injury. Instead, the parent walked along and periodically turned around and says, come on, let's go, which is a good thing to do because we need non-traumatic frustration. We need to learn to live with anxiety. So the child was safe. There's an interconnectedness that was affirmed. The fundamental problem is that we live in a culture that's driven by a system that denies the interconnectedness. That's the fundamental problem. We live in a culture that affirms a hyper-individualism. We live in a culture that's dictated by this. This is one Sunday's paper. There is a lot of our culture's investment in this. We live in a culture that's driven by the value system that puts whatever this is above human interconnectedness and human kindness. As a matter of fact, that economic system says that we can't understand objects that we need as citizens unless it is scarce. We have to have a desire for it, and it is scarce. What that little boy was experiencing by his parent was not a scarcity of support, was not a scarcity of internalizing mom that when he was anxious, he called out for his mother, which brought comfort, which when he called out for mother when he was anxious brought comfort, and the other parent was walking him along, and it was okay. This system would say to that little boy, quit your whining and let's go. This system says that to possess and to value persons and objects, I can't quite know how to communicate it. Even if there is enough, we're in a system that will create a structure that makes it scarce. Even if there's enough love and emotion to be congruent as people in this system, we would deny care, love, and emotion. Even if there's enough, we would say, no, there's not enough. And that will determine the price of the object. And Black Friday was mentioned, and we can go all kinds of metaphors of what that might mean. But what I noticed about that was my son was visiting, and he's got the big eyes on a 42-inch television, right? But there's only 11 of them. Now, you know there could be 1,000 of them, but there's only 11. And so at 3:30 on Thanksgiving afternoon, the store's going to open 5 o'clock the next day, people are lining up. Now, he got there at 12 o'clock at night, and there was already 125 people in line. Which is okay. I mean, he'd have saved $700 if he would have gotten what his idea wanted. Now, I understand that. And I said, for me to do that, I'd have to be 22, because I'm not doing that at this age. Maybe the others, but I'm not. I'm going to go in bed and get up when I want to get up. But there was a deliberate scarcity. So we're talking about developing a mission statement that goes against our value system. And if we wanted to put our value system in terms of an idea, it would come under collectivism, which affirms community, it affirms being interconnected, it affirms the group. It says that, in economic terms, it says that the group should share the power of decision-making, and that the accumulation of wealth should not be to individuals, but there should be a distribution in the whole group. And then we go, oh my God, communism, socialism. It's immediately where we go. But we don't think about the other side of that. We don't think about the deprivation of that. We don't think about the lack of health care. We don't think about those things. But if we're going to develop a mission, and if we're going to develop a mission statement, we have to think about the tension between the total needs of the whole and the needs of the individual. And we have to understand how that works in our culture. We have to guard against, in our mission statement, we have to guard against being part of the problem that promotes a scarcity when it's not there. We have to guard against being part of the problem that might affirm cultural tyranny and that we would go along with it. An example of that, we go back to John Hagee. John Hagee created a mission that affirms the tyranny of culture. He created a mission that feeds his own needs, that feeds that community's own needs and doesn't look outside the community. Like when I was in my clinical training and when I sensed a being called, in order to move forward, you had to hear voices from an outside group about who you were and how you thought. We're in an association of Unitarian Universalist churches, and we open ourselves up to feedback and to dialogue and to openness about other people coming in and talking to us about who we are and what we're doing. John Hagee's group does not do that. They exist in isolation. They create their own belief system. And then they create a process that affirms their own belief system, and what they come out with is the belief system that says an act of love can be a preemptive strike on another nation. That's an example of a mission that feeds one's own needs. When we develop a mission and a mission statement, we need to understand our community so that when we say we're going to move in this direction, we know with some honesty that there is an actual need that we are taking care of that exists, that's other than who we are. And we'll be talking about that in the next couple weeks. That means we have to look outside of ourselves in order to determine how we're going to be in this community and the direction we're going to go in. We have to be other than what the airwaves tell us to be. There was this man named Paul, who wrote in the Christian sacred text in the New Testament, and he was writing a letter to the community in Rome. Now, this man, Paul, was trained at the best schools of his day for rabbinical training. I mean, he was trained at the Harvard, at the Yale, at the Emory. He was trained at the best schools, and he was conformed to his religious beliefs. And his religious beliefs affirmed the society that he lived in. He was so conformed to his belief that when something close to his belief came along but wasn't quite right, he set out on a path, and his religion affirmed him murdering other people that did not believe like him. So we know that social conformity gives us permission to hurt other people without recourse. We know that. So he changed, got converted. And after 10 years after his conversion, which is an interesting story, because sometimes when you get converted from conformity, it takes a bit of time to come around. And he wrote to this church, "Be not conformed to the world. Be not conformed to the world." What we need to do as a people, as a group, is to understand how we are conformed to this world, because we are, you and I, we are conformed to this world. We need to understand how we are so we can choose not to be. And we need to understand what that means in terms of our mission, which we are going to be looking at to choose. Because I'm going to be maybe a bit intrusive. I'm going to be strong about not having a mission statement unless we have a mission. Not having a spoken value system, not having a spoken mission statement unless we have behavior that goes with it. Not having talked about nonconformity, not talking about what it means to be in the process of challenging John Hay, unless we have behavior that stands over and against it. As we begin to reflect as a people and as a group, and reflect about our own personal values and our group values, we are called to change and to transform not just how we think, but how we behave. to do both. And we'll know our thoughts and our spiritual lives are transformed when our behavior changes. When the rummage sale becomes more important than our television show. When the rummage sale becomes more important than maybe even a trip to the beach. When the support of our church and of our community becomes more important than my own individual desires and needs. That's when we'll know that we are ready to choose a mission statement and put a mission behind it.